Welcome back to another episode of Stand on Guard. I'm your host, David Creighton. I promise you this week, because we're not doing question period, we would examine what some of our favorite MPs, cabinet ministers, are doing this week. And I think you won't be disappointed today, because we've taken a very close look at that exalted grand poobah of the environment and climate change minister, Stephen Gilbo, Disco Steve Gilbo. As I mentioned the other day, you know, we have heard stories that he was an extra in Saturday Night Fever, you know, that John Travolta disco movie from the 70s. Yep, I don't know. I don't know. You be the judge of that. Maybe he was the underage kid in the bar. I don't know. But we'll be right back to explain how Mr. Gilbo's week has been going.
So we are in a very precarious position in this country. We need political change, but we also need to resolve to resist.
Ah, thanks for joining us today. This is going to be a real pleasure. As I said, we're not doing question periods this week because it's not happening. Another week off for these layabouts. But Stephen Gilbo has been very busy this week, up to his usual stuff. And so we thought we'd take you through some of the material he's been dishing out this week. And it's actually quite fascinating. So let's have a look at that. Yeah, he was BC bound in the very beginning here. And of course, he's out there selling heat pumps and claiming all of these forest fires, these wildfires, are a direct result of ecological pressures. That's code for climate change. You have to be careful when you say it here. But you know, that's an example of Trudeauing. And if you're really interested in Trudeauing, we've got some great stickers for you. Have a look at our store. We've got some Trudeauing stickers for you that I think you might like. But everything to Mr. Gilbo is climate change related.
And hello, everyone. Stephen Gilbo here, Minister of Environment and Climate Change, with my friend and colleague Josie Osborne from the BC government. We just made a very cool announcement on our collaboration with the government of British Columbia, and something that will help greatly British Columbians.
We are partnering with the federal government to deliver heat pump rebates to people, cover that cost gap with the cost of installing equipment that both cools your home in the summer, heats your home in the winter. We know just how important it is to reach as many families as we can. So you could qualify for rebates up to $24,000 depending on your household size and your income level. Top ups for northern residents up to $3,000. That's going to help you save money and save greenhouse gas emissions.
Good example of governments working together to serve British Columbians and Canadians.
Now, I don't know how much he thinks he's serving British Columbians or Canadians, but leave it to Stephen Gilbo to serve himself. Gilbo is out there hawking electric cars, but as this image suggests, would you buy a car from this man? Remember the scene we played of Gilbo from 2001 when he's in the orange prison garb because he was arrested for a Greenpeace stunt? That's Stephen Gilbo. He's also the guy in the pink jacket, the guy in the suit, and who pretends to be a cabinet minister these days. But let's put this all in perspective. This is Stephen Gilbo was an environmental Greenpeace activist before he ever got into politics in this way that he's in it today, as a member of parliament and cabinet minister, but he was an activist, and that's what he's all about. Well, let's continue on the timeline of his week here. He's blaming floods. Now, I have to ask you, and I'm sure you, dear listeners, dear viewers, would have an opinion on this. Do you think climate change is necessarily responsible for all of these forest fires, these wildfires, like the ones in Fort Nelson right now, the ones that burned throughout Alberta? What about all those arrests for arson? I mean, and I did a couple of stories on this. There were multiple arrests across the country from BC to Quebec and even in the Maritimes for people who deliberately set these fires. This is rank arson. That's what this is. And to link it with climate change, to say the science links it to climate change, is a complete fabrication. I'm sure you can find scientists, so-called scientists out there, who will link it to climate change. No question. You can always find scientists in any age who will link a political issue to science in some way or another. And every political system has one. I don't want to suggest our Canadian scientists are like those in Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia. However, scientists in those countries came up with the data necessary to justify their government's very onerous policies at times. Now, is the climate change policy on par with some of the policies in those countries? Maybe not. But it is impoverishing Canadians, and it's making life difficult. So, maybe there is a similarity to some degree. Now, Trudeau, of course, is backing him up 100%. So, this is the plan. Celebrating capping oil and gas in BC. And Guilbeau is glad-handing it with the BC government, which, of course, is even worse than the federal Liberal government in terms of going after people with the existential threat of climate change. BC pays over $2 a liter for gas. One of you folks who goes on Question Period with me every day when we're doing it live lives not far from where I grew up in Vancouver Island, and they're paying over $2.20 a liter for gas. Now, wonder why that is. It's because BC is laying on the taxes as heavy as the federal government. And of course, BC was proud to take over the federal government's carbon tax program. Plus, they've got other taxes and levies and takeaways on top of everything. So God help people living in BC right now. And that's my province of birth. My mother is still there. And it's where most of my friends from high school still live, in Comox, British Columbia, paying through the nose for gasoline thanks to a provincial government that is crazy. And they just found out how crazy they were on opioid drugs. You could smoke crack in a children's playground, in a hospital, no problem. BC government was doing a pilot project. It got so bad that even the left-wing BC government said, we can't do this anymore. And they said, they threw out a lifeline to Justin Trudeau saying, recriminalize hard use of drugs or public use of hard drugs in BC, please, because we're going to get decimated in the next election if this continues. Well, hopefully they will be. They deserve it. Now, Stephen went back to Montreal, put on his disco jacket for the sustainable thing. What a guy. And of course, all the time he's saying, where is the disco? And guess what? We've got to stop. Wait. We've got to stop that. Let's back it up there. Guess what? Guilbeau gave himself an award for all of his hard work. A climate award. Now, if you look up narcissist in the dictionary, yes, I know you'll find a picture of Justin Trudeau first, but right next to Justin's photograph will be one of Stephen Guilbeau. This is a man who's totally self-obsessed with himself. He really believes that everything he's doing is so important because he's doing it. He sees himself as destined to be this apostle for the environment, this apostle for climate change. He really believes he's saving Canada, even though Canada produces how much? Less, between 1 and 1.5%. I'll put it that way, because sometimes it's closer to 1%, sometimes closer to 1.5. But just over 1% of global greenhouse gas emissions are coming from Canada. So try to figure this out for a minute. If Canada produces these global gas emissions in such small amounts, how is it going to benefit the global picture if we stop producing any greenhouse gas emissions? Doesn't that mean that 99% of the greenhouse gas emissions are still being produced and are still going to produce this climate change that Guilbeau is so worried about? How is Canada's participation or non-participation going to have any effect on the larger picture? The answer is zilch, zero, none. But we're going to be punished in the process. Canadians are going to be put in a lot of hurt because Guilbeault says so. Now let's go to the end of this thing here. That's why we call him King Guilbeault. You see the crown of plastic straws? Yes. And they were back at the beginning. What a week for the man, eh? I mean, yeah, he sure does work hard for you, doesn't he? Except he doesn't. Now, all of this nonsense about everything, every fire, every flood, every gale force wind, every hurricane, every tornado, everything is ultimately the responsibility of climate change. Is it true? Or is it false? F-A-L-S-E. Well, you know, the Fraser Institute is a think tank that I've gone back to dozens of times when I've done stories about taxes in Canada, about health care in Canada, and now they've produced a wonderful bulletin on extreme weather and climate change. I'm going to have to reach for my glasses to read you the next thing here, but this is quite interesting, because guess what the Fraser Institute discovered? There is no scientific connection for this to be all about climate change. It's all nonsense. Let's read this. Drought. Data from the World Meteorological Organization Standardized Precipitation Index showed no statistically significant trends in drought duration or magnitude, with the exception of some small regions in Africa and South America, from 1900 to 2020. Bang! Flooding. Research in the Journal of Hydrology in 2017, analyzing 9,213 recording stations around the world, found there were more stations exhibiting significant decreasing trends in flood risk than increasing trends. Bang! Hurricanes. Research conducted for the World Meteorological Organization in 2019, updated in 2023, found no long-term trends in hurricanes or major hurricanes recorded globally going back to 1980. Bang. Whoops. Guilbeault strikes again. Forest fires. The Royal Society in London in 2020 found that when considering the total area burned in the global level, there is no overall increase, but rather a decline over the last decades. In Canada, data from Canada's Wildfire Fire Information System shows that the number of fires and the area burned in Canada have both been declining over the past 30 years. And the report concludes, the evidence is clear. Many of the claims that extreme weather events are increasing are simply not empirically true. So, folks, those are the facts. Now, some people might not like those facts. Some people might say, you know, that's not what I want to hear. But those are the facts. Now, more information here from a guy who sits on the environment committee. He's the vice chair of the Environment Committee. This is Dan Mazier. Another slush fund. Now that's vocabulary that the Trudeau government not only comprehends very well, but utilizes extremely well on a regular basis. How many slush funds does one government need or have? Now, Holly Dean notes here in this ex post, Commons Environment Committee by unanimous vote orders disclosure of $8 billion in subsidies under a federal program claiming to lower industrial GHG emissions. Sponsor of the motion calls it another slush fund. That's from the latest Black Lux. Interesting, no? Yes. I think so. It just never seems to end. And here's Dan's breaking news. Environment Commissioner reveals 70% of companies Trudeau gave funds to through his $8 billion slush fund had no commitment, no capital N, capital O, commitment to reduce emissions. No strings attached, cash for Canada's biggest emitters. So, and meanwhile, Trudeau slaps Canadians with a 23% carbon tax hike. Now, just take your breath here. What does this all add up to? Think about this for a minute. And I'm sure you don't even have to think about it for a minute. Think about it for 10 seconds. What is the Trudeau government doing here? This is all a mirage. This is all fraudsters. This is all fraudulent. This is Trudeau using the pretext of climate change to once again pay off his friends who are not even fighting climate change, as Trudeau likes to call it all the time. In fact, they're not fighting anything, are they? Except lining their own pockets. And that seems to be the norm in so many cases here. So, you know, it really does disgust me how this government gets away with this time after time after time. And there's never any ramifications legally. There's never any real political consequences. I mean, the guy got elected again. He got reelected in the last federal election, even after all the scandal professionally, in terms of the all of the incredible scandal that he went through with SNC-Lavalin and his personal attempts to keep the company exempt from judicial proceedings, and his personal scandals of donning blackface for most of his adult life and seeing nothing hypocritical about that. Well, he calls everybody who opposes him as a rank racist. Never sees any problem with that, does he? And there never will be a contradiction in those terms for Justin Trudeau. So what do you do with the Trudeau government? It's really time to say goodbye, isn't it? I'm afraid we still have less than a year and a half unless we can convince the NDP to vote against this government in a non-confidence motion. I keep saying the existential threat to Canada is not climate change. The existential threat to Canada is Trudeau's government and the policies he's foisting on us and shoving down our throats. Not just the stuff we talked about today, but the material like the Online Harms Act, the euthanasia, and on, and especially the carbon tax, which is strangling the life out of the economy and impoverishing Canadians and immiserating individuals in this country. You know, and as my friend Neil Oliver said in our last conversation, in the interview that was aired, and I hope many of you had a chance to see that, governments don't have to tax people into the ground anymore to raise money. They just print it. They just keep printing money, which of course is inflationary, but that's no problem. They just keep raising interest rates, and that hurts us too. The tax thing is all about immiserating us, making us miserable, increasing the misery index in Canada. That's what the Trudeau government is doing to every individual Canadian. That's their primary political objective, is to make life difficult for us. So we give up. We stop fighting. Well, we're not going to stop fighting here on Stand and Guard. I want to share something with you here. If you watch my broadcast on the World Health Organization and the pandemic agreement, yeah, they've watered it down somewhat because there was a little bit of pushback from some quarters, but not much in Canada. Not much in Canada at all. In fact, I kept getting comments every day when I was doing live broadcasts from you folks who said, "What's happening with the pandemic treaty? What's happening with the WHO pandemic treaty? We don't hear anything about it." Well, there was one member of parliament from the Toronto area, Dr. Leslyn Lewis. She was also one of the candidates for the leadership of the Conservative Party of Canada. She was doing some marvelous work on this. She had a petition out. She was exposing how dangerous this agreement can be in terms of losing our national sovereignty. So as I promised you folks out today, I'm going to invite Leslyn Lewis to come on this show, to come on this program and to talk about her efforts to stop this treaty. You know what? Here's the response I got back today. And I'll read this to you from my email. "Dear David, At the present time, Dr. Lewis is focused on matters in her riding of Haldimand, Norfolk, and with her infrastructure critic portfolio. And unfortunately, is solidly booked up over the next few months. So did you grab that? She's booked up for the next few months. She's so busy, she hasn't got 20 minutes to speak to me on this program about the WHO pandemic agreement. So busy with her portfolio of infrastructure. There's just so much work to do. And she hasn't got time to do interviews on the WHO pandemic agreement. You know what, folks? As I've told you many times, I worked on Parliament Hill for 8 years. I worked within the party system she's working in right now, and I'll never work within it again. By choice and by mutual choice. But that's called the Conservative Party, or the leader of the official opposition, or the official opposition leader. O-L-O. Official leader's office. In other words, Pierre Poilievre's office, saying, this is how we're conducting communications. The opposition leader's office, OLO, sorry, I finally got it. That is the office that tells MPs what they can say and what they can't say. I believe Leslyn Lewis is under a gag order right now. I believe she's been told not to talk about the WHO pandemic agreement, because otherwise I think I would have got an answer in the affirmative when I asked for an interview. So yes, I'm out there asking for interviews, and I tell you, it's not always easy. Even when you know these people, I don't know Leslyn Lewis, but I know a lot of the MPs, and I've worked in a lot of their offices, and I've worked in government, and I've worked at the House, at the Hill. I know how the system operates. I know how you get questions answered. I know who you're supposed to talk to. And right now, I'm seeing a lot of Conservative MPs who just don't want to talk, and I think that might have something to do with their communications department. Should be no surprise to anybody who knows how government works. But it's disappointing, because there's an article I read today. I haven't got a slide for it because it just came up before I came on the broadcast, from the Epoch Times, saying that there's scant resistance to the WHO pandemic agreement in Canada. One area of that scant resistance was Leslyn Lewis. She has done a terrific job trying to raise the profile and expose what this agreement is all about. Apparently, she's not going to be doing much more work in this file right now. And we need it done now, because now is when this treaty is coming up. And we're not hearing anything about this treaty in the House of Commons during question period from either the government or the official opposition or those other de facto parties. Well, those de facto government parties, I should say, the NDP and the Bloc, who are working with the Liberals. So we need answers on this, and I'm sorry we're not getting them. Thanks for watching today. I will be back tomorrow. And next week, question period is back on Tuesday, and we'll be back doing that. Thanks for your support, and thanks for over 300 subscribers in the last 24 hours. You are making this station go ahead and upwards, climbing ever upwards. Thank you for your support. I could not do this without you. And I'm on here fighting for Canada and fighting for you and for me, because I still believe this country can survive. And nobody is going to tell me it's a lost cause. Not just yet. I'm going to keep the fight going. Thanks for watching. And we'll be back again soon. Thank you for watching this episode of Stand on Guard, and being a part of the Creighton's Right channel. If you've watched this episode to this point, you've watched it all. And that's really important for a small station like this. We always say, subscribe, hit the bell, be a part of the Creighton resistance. Resolve to resist. That's what we're doing. And if you become a subscriber, if you're a supporter of this station, or a member through Substack, through YouTube, and now you can be a local as well. That's so important to us, because I couldn't do this without you. I made a decision to become an independent journalist about a year ago, because I wanted to bring all of my experience in the military, in journalism, to you.
I don't promise anything I can't deliver. I don't offer clickbait. I offer truth. The truth is out there, and it's my job to bring that truth to light and to you. Thanks for being a part of